To hear all the clips of the show like this and more, please sign up to our weekly Nolan newsletter at bbc.co.uk/Nolan. Time for our Friday interview. Charlie Mullins was born to a poor working class family. He was just 15 when he signed up as an apprentice plumber. And guess what? He never looked back. He's now a multi-millionaire. How do you go from working as an apprentice to being a multi-millionaire plumber? His firm, Pimlico Plumbers, is worth millions. But it hasn't been an easy ride. I've been speaking to Charlie, and he started by telling me about his upbringing.
Pretty rough and tough, I suppose, like a lot of youngsters. Brought up on a council estate, and money was tight, and life was difficult.
How difficult?
I've been working since I've been about nine, Steve. I used to bunk off school and help a local plumber, and that's what got me into the plumbing business, and done various other jobs, you know, bag wash delivery, peeling the potatoes in the chip shop, or not peeling them, but putting them in the machine to peel them and getting them eyes out and all that, and car washing, and just loads of jobs. So,
Did you like school when you were young?
Sorry?
Did you like school when you were young?
No, I couldn't stand it. I mean, it's absolutely, not my cup of tea, Steve. I left at 15 with, no qualifications, very little education. I realise now it was a massive mistake. You know what I mean? I should have left at 14.
What was it about school that didn't do it for you?
I think I was only really interested in, people that, that they thought was going to do well in life. You know what I mean? You know, if you was going to work in an office or become something a bit more important than a plumber. I just really wasn't that interested in people that was good with their hands, I think, and which is unfortunate, because a lot of people I know many, many years ago, they've not really been that successful in life. You know, they've got the brains but not got the enthusiasm.
And did that rock your confidence when you were a kid then, that the teachers weren't interested in you?
Undoubtedly, you know what I mean? Undoubtedly. I used to really only turn up at school for, like, woodwork and metalwork and PE and football and boxing. When I say I used to only turn up, you know, those were the things that I enjoyed. And I just think now that it's unfortunate that, you know, schools have done away with, sort of working with your hands, sort of that type of things.
So what was the turning point for you then? What was the game changer for you?
Well, I used to say it's a bunk off school, help this local plumber. And, he had a motorbike, he had a car, he had a nice house, he used to go on holidays, and he had bundles of money. And he said to me,
what was this guy's name?
Bill Ellis.
Bill Ellis.
Unfortunately, yeah. He's passed away now, unfortunately. But a great guy and a great inspiration. And, I always say to everyone, the seeds were certainly sown then. And, if it had been a bank robber, I'd have been a bank robber. You know, I was that sort of struck on whatever he'd done seemed to be good. And fortunately, it was plumbing. He advised me at the time, Steve, that, if I do an apprenticeship in plumbing, I'll never be out of work and I'll earn loads of money. And he was right.
Why did he inspire you? What was it about him?
Sorry?
Why did he inspire you? What was it about him?
Well, in the area, pretty much most people didn't have no money. A lot of people, didn't have jobs. People was really sort of scraping by to get a living, and life was pretty tough, in general. But he stood out from everybody. He had a motorbike, he had a car, nice clothes. It was just a guy that sort of had done well. And, that's what rubbed off on me, It's sort of, I didn't realise, how important it is to have a job and certainly, to have your own business. If you're successful, then for me, there's nothing better,
So you started earning money then during your apprenticeship?
Well, I guess just so I didn't earn money with an apprenticeship, you don't earn two bob, I think I was getting £3 a week at the time. And when I sort of finished my apprenticeship, I was 19 and I was getting about £19 a week, I believe. And, you don't get the money then, but again, it was pointed out to me, what you don't get then, you'll get later. And that's exactly what's happened, and not just for me, I don't know any poor plumbers,
Yeah, you were a good boxer at the time, but it just wasn't to be, was it? You got a head injury during a match, and that ruined your career.
That's right. I was boxing London versus Wales and got knocked out in the second round. And, hit my head on the apron of the ring, wound up in hospital for about a week. And I had two more fights after that, and then, you know, went to go pro, and they wouldn't give me a license to go professional because of the head injury. I mean, looking back, I've got to agree with them. You know, a lot of people said at the time it was probably the best thing that happened to me, you know, not to continue with boxing because it's very much a short-lived career. But don't get me wrong, that was my passion, and, you know, I'd rather be sitting here now talking boxing than plumbing. But, you know, I'm not upset with it, and I think I devoted all my time and energy into plumbing. And, you know, I know you're going to mention me OBE, Steve, but, you know, I just got an OBE in the Queen's Honours.
Congratulations. Honestly.
And, well, thank you. Have you got one of them, Steve?
No, I'll never get one. I upset government too much. Let me tell you, I'll never get one of those.
Really? Yeah. Well, it sounds like I'm drinking from the same teapot as them, because you probably, I don't know if you are aware, but I work quite closely with the government, you know, regarding getting apprentices into work. And, you know, I'm not saying they give me it for that. They give me it for plumbing services and, you know, various other bits that we get involved with, charities, etc.
Not bad for a kid that they said wouldn't make it in school, eh?
Well, you know, I think it's, you know, I have to say, I'm not going to knock education, but, you know, there's life out there without a degree. And, you know, many successful people that are apprentices go on to run their own business. And, you know, it's a level playing field out there now. So, you know, if, you know, my kids never went to university, they come into the plumbing industry with me. And, you know, I believe it was the right move.
Tell me how you got your big break then. I understand Bill Ellis was the original inspiration, but starting your own business, lots of people want to do that these days. Big, big step. How did you start yours?
Well, as soon as I finished my apprenticeship, Steve, at 19, four-year apprenticeship, I became self-employed and started setting up a customer base. And, you know, you sort of, people will always, there's always a demand for quality service. And if you're good at something, you know, and I'm not blowing my own trumpet, but obviously I couldn't have been a bad plumber because I wouldn't have been where I am today. And, you know, you build it up. And you know, I think that, you know, as the years have gone by, you know, plumbing industry didn't have a good name, and I sort of set out to change the sort of the stigma in that, you know, by, you know, plumbers turn up late, dirty old van, not transparent, and not getting the job done. And I've really just done the opposite and done it the right way. And, you know, I believe it's changed the plumbing industry now, and, you know, there's a lot of great companies out there doing the same thing, doing the job right.
I don't understand, though. So what made you different? You're saying what made you different was your dress sense.
Well,
it
not
must have been a lot more than that.
No, not the dress sense, Steve. What I mean is, you know, we're a tidy outfit, the company, you know, Pimlico Plumbers. We're very tidy and we have nice vans and we're very transparent and we get the job done. And, you know, we only employ top tradesmen that have done an apprenticeship. As I say, I think what made me different, you know, I really done the job right and probably went over and above what people was expecting, you know. And as I say, people will always pay for quality of service and value for money.
Yeah, but people think that you need lots of money to start a business, don't they? You need to be rolling in it to achieve what you've achieved.
Well, I'd say no, if I'm being honest. I mean, you know, you don't need brains, you don't need money, but what you do need is enthusiasm. And you can't buy enthusiasm. You know, you've got to say, you know, oh, I'm going to do this and I want to do well. And, you know, one of the most important ingredients, Steve, in running a business, and people bypass this one, it's called hard work, you know. And, well, you know, I'm sure you know, because I know you're always saying how hard you work on this radio station and things you do.
I don't know if I work hard, but I work 7 days a week. And I don't know. I would nearly be frightened not to take every opportunity that I'm given, because you don't know when the next one's coming.
Well, that's right. But you know, unfortunately, you know, people don't see it like that. And, you know, the more you put into anything, Steve, you know, I'm not want to say things to you, because I know you know you've been around a bit and, you know, been on the radio for years, and, you know, you're a well respected guy, and, you know, I'm sure you're doing very successful. But the more you put into anything, the more you get out of it.
So by 1990, Charlie, you were turning over $1 million a year.
Yes.
That's exciting.
Yeah. But I don't know.
Do you love money? Do you have to be greedy for money to be a good businessman?
I don't necessarily have to be greedy. I think you've got to be hungry. I mean, you've certainly got to be hungry. And, you know, and I think, unfortunately, a lot of people that come from money, they don't necessarily feel that they have to work to continue in life. And, you know, mine was the opposite. And I'm probably no different from many other people out there that have, you know, come from nothing and been successful. I mean, I think the point I'm probably trying to get across in the book is that, you know, you can be successful. It's all about, sounds corny, but believing in yourself and getting on with it, you know, and you know, don't put up with all these nuisances around you. You know, it says in the book, Steve, you know, I'm not a great lover of banks. I mean, they're crooks in suits, you know. And, you know, I don't borrow money off of them. I did years ago and they nearly sent me bust. You know, work hard, put your money back into the business. And, you know, I'm pretty convinced that you can be successful just via that, you know. And, of course, you know, you've got to do that little bit extra than, you know, the average worker. But, you know, there's a lot of clever people out there, that, you know, that want to be successful.
You mentioned you nearly went bust. That's when you bought a property, wasn't it? What happened?
That's right. I borrowed £250,000 from this bank. And, you know, I must have been, this was in 1990. And then in April 91, I paid £250,000 for it, and you know, the bank wanted to give me the money, and which they did give it to me. And then 4 months later, you know, I was the biggest idiot going because, you know, recession was on. It wasn't worth two bob, according to them. And, you know, they were trying to force me to sell it. They weren't happy with the assets of it. And, you know, I sort of ripped it all apart because that's where we moved their offices to. At the time, and you know, they just wasn't happy. They told me to sell my car, and you know, they wouldn't give me an overdraft, and it was just chaos. You know, I went and see two liquidators, Steve, and you know, one liquidator said, "How much do you owe?" And I believe, you know, with suppliers and taxes and national insurance, we owed about $500,000, or I owed $500,000. And you know, he said to me, "How much have you got?" I said, "Well, obviously, I ain't got nothing." He said, "Okay, it's not difficult. You need to go bust." And, you know, but, and then my accountant, and I changed my accountant at the time, and this new accountant said, "Look, I'm going to get a second opinion." Went to the next liquidator, and he just said, "Look, you're going to lose your house, you're going to lose your business, you're going to, you know, it's going to give you problems for years, you may as well fight for it." And that's what I'd done, and I changed everything, you know what I mean? I mean, I had a lot of people loaning us money at the time, Steve, the customers. But now we changed that policy, or I changed it back then in the early 90s, and we do payment on completion now. So we don't have any cash flow problems. And I think
people
respect that.
Must have been scary, though, Charlie, getting used to money.
Sorry?
And then it must have been scary getting used to money and then nearly losing it all again.
It is. I mean, you know, and I'm probably going to go back to my boxing days then, you know. You know, if you go over in the ring and you don't get up, you're finished job. And I think that's a bit like in business, you know. You get knocked down and you have two choices, stay down or get up. And quite often, many boxers get up, Steve, and they wind up winning the fight. And I think that's what I've done, you know. I either sort of stay down on the ground or get up and fight. And, you know.
How did you fight your way out of that liquidation?
Well, as many hours as possible. You know, I started doing the plumbing again myself. You know, I was doing the emergency work again. And, you know, everybody that was on the company with me at the time, I probably had, I don't know, I'm guessing a bit, might have been 30 or 40 guys on board with us at the time, or staff and everything. And I sort of changed everybody. I mean, most of them, like, jump ship anyhow, you know what I mean? Like rats do, don't they? They get off the ship. And that's what a lot of them done, you know. They deserted us. And, you know, I just changed everything, changed the system, become a lot more definite in business, and, you know, weren't really going to have anybody owing me any money again. And I weren't having nothing to do with banks no more, you know. That was sure. I paid the bank off pretty quickly and got rid of them. You know, I changed my bank. You know, I'm proud to say now that the bank I'm with now, I mean, I can probably remember the name, not that I'm really interested in the name, but, you know, I've never met the bank manager. Been with them since 1991. Never met the bank manager, never will. You know, I put my money in the bank and I take my money out. That's all I want banks for.
So that was an experience that has marked you. Does it make you more risk averse?
You'll have to explain that one, Steve.
Does it make you less likely to take risks?
No, I mean, look, in business, you've got to be a gambler. You've got to take risks, you know what I mean? You can't sit on the fence. I'll take risks. I just won't have nothing to do with bankers. You know, I'm not going to have anybody else in charge of my business. You know, the bank often, well, they've probably changed manager 50 times in that time, and they ring us up, can we come down? Why is that then? We'd like to see how your business runs. Well, have a look at my account, and that tells you. Yeah, but we'd like to know a bit more. But, I mean, what do they know about plumbing? You know, what do they know about business? You know what I mean? So I don't have no dealings with them. And, you know, all I'm saying to people is, you know, if you've got to borrow money, maybe there's a better source than getting it from a bank, you know, family, friends, investors, you know, or, you know, just keep working and sort of put the money back into the business.
Do you not think, Charlie, bankers in this country have got a bad press? Yeah, fair enough. They were responsible for some of it, but they weren't responsible for all of it. And people borrowed money that they knew they couldn't afford to pay back.
Well, with respect, Steve, I'm going to say that the banks, you know, shouldn't have lent them the money. I'm not going to blame the consumer. You know, if someone's giving you, you know, I mean, it's like this bank I actually went and got the money from, if you can believe it. I was in their group of banks in where I lived, and I never even met this bank manager, and he offered me £250,000. This was done through financial advisor and accountants at the time. Never met them. And what the deal was, it was the same company, but leave that branch and move to my one, and I'll give you £250,000. You with me? I mean, they didn't even know me. And so I moved. It was the biggest mistake I ever made. You know, so I'm not going to blame the borrower. I'm going to blame the people that you know, let's be, I mean, at that time, Steve, I was paying 17% interest rate.
Wow.
You know what I mean? I mean, you know, I mean, what chance have you got of surviving? And
17%.
17% of the time I borrowed the money on. I mean, you know, it's madness. And you know, so, you know, it makes it too easy, these banks. You know, it's a bit, you know the saying, Steve, that they're happy to lend you an umbrella as long as it ain't raining.
What do you spend your money on? Do you like your big cars and your big houses?
Yeah. Of course I do. Yeah, I work harder and enjoy life. I sort of, holiday a lot, go away a lot. And, you know, I was in Marbella. I have a branch out in Marbella, so that's great. And, you know, Las Vegas, New York, Dubai, Marbella.
I love Las Vegas. Las Vegas is a dangerous place if you've got money there.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's, you are right. I mean, but, you know, we're not idiots, are we? You know what I mean? We don't take every penny with us. We, you know, but, yeah, of course I enjoy it. And, you know, I don't want to make it all sound that it's all about, you know, me spend money. But, you know, I invest heavily back into the business. And, you know, we obviously help certain charities and different organisations. You know, I do quite a bit of work with the Princess Trust, getting youngsters into work. And, you know, I'm a great believer, you know, you've got to put a bit back in if you take it out.
David Cameron has had, obviously, a very surprising election for him. Do you think it was business and Labour not communicating with business?
Undoubtedly. Steve, I'd done a statement, a press statement back in October. And, you know, I went to the party conference up in Manchester. Was you there?
No, I wasn't, no. Not this time.
Come on, Steve. You've got to get yourself out and about, mate. anyway, I was up there and he'd done a speech, Cameron, you know, what he was going to plan to do in that, and it blew me away. I've never been to a conference before and it blew me away. And I made a statement then and I said, you know, that speech just won him the election. And, you know, I never see any doubt in them winning. You know, it was never an issue of them going to win. And if you look at it, you know, I'm not going to sit here and start knocking, I don't know what you'd call them, some of them lot with Labour, but anyway, I won't call them it. But they was clueless, you know. Ed Miliband's got no idea about business, and some of the other people around him, I mean, they're just clueless, you know what I mean? And, you know, with respect to David Cameron, and he's got a great team around him, you know. He's got some good people there, you know, that are drinking from the same teapot. And, you know,
well, they may be for business people and they may be for rich people, but what are they going to do for poor people, Charlie, and people who are on benefits? They're going to slaughter them somewhere.
Well, you say that, Steve, but look, you know, I'm going to probably put my neck on the block here. Look, you know, there's a lot of people on benefits, Steve, and, you know, unfortunately they are on them and they need the benefits. You know, they've got problems that, you know, they can't get round and they need them. But there's also a lot of people on benefits, Steve, that don't need to be on them, the ones that are draining the company. The country. And, you know, look, the best thing you can do to get people into work is to cut benefits, you know, because the more you give them, the more they stay at home. But of course,
well, that's pretty harsh.
You presume the people on
benefits are choosing to be on benefits, Charlie.
Well, that's what I said to you. Some of the people that are unfortunate and have to be on them, you know, we have to look after them people and actually give them more money. But the people that are capable of work and work is out there that they refuse, they're the ones that we have to get into the workplace, which will then bring in more money for the economy, which will then help the people that need the money. You know, I'm not being harsh. I'm being truthful and factual. And, you know, of course, unfortunately, there's a lot of people that can't get work and genuinely do have problems. But there's a lot of people out there, Steve, that are draining the country. You know, and me and you and all the other taxpayers are paying for it. And it needs to change. And that's what the government's doing. They're changing it.
Do you really trust this government, though, that they won't hit the poor? That they won't, in targeting those people who are unnecessarily claiming benefits, they're going to hurt the disabled, they're going to hurt the vulnerable.
No, Steve, you're talking about family people here. You know, Cameron made a statement once that, you know, how much he wants to help the NHS. And, you know, he said that at the time, this was back in October, and he said at the time that he possibly uses the NHS more than a lot of other people, or he had used it a lot. You know, he had a very sort of ill son who unfortunately is not with us no longer. And, you know, so, and people laughed at that when he said it. And I thought myself, you know, you guys don't get it, you know. I mean, you know, he wants the NHS to improve, and I believe he will improve it. And I believe he will improve situations for unemployed people that can't work, and he'll improve it for unemployed people that can work.
Your book is called Bog Standard Business, where I took the plunge and became a millionaire plumber. Now that you are one, what's next for you? What are your dreams? What do you still want to achieve, Charlie?
Yeah, well, they're not dreams. They're reality. I mean, we're Pimlico Plumbers expanding in London. We're not going to move out of London. And we're going to get, hopefully, more of the market share there. We employ about 290 people now, Steve, and turn over 25 mil. And my intention is to have 500 people and get to 100 mil turnover.
Wow.
And it's not all about the money, Steve, because, you know, believe me, you know, what goes around comes around. And, you know, I think it's all about just, you know, the fact that you can be successful. And, you know, it's just about sort of getting on with it and believing in yourself, you know. And, and that's the message I like to give to the youngsters, you know. It's a level playing field out there.
Real pleasure talking to you, Charlie. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. It's lovely to talk to you, mate.